Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
I'm going to get a good payday, whatever happens. I wish Lummy Charlie. I can't wait to get in for a pipe. Clear off out of the way.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 8th through 11th. 100% of ticket sales go to local charities. Order now at WincoFoodsPortlandOpen.com.
It's British Open Week on Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Ahoy, fine people of Portland. It is a ropless edition of Primetime on a beautiful Friday.
Hello.
Although I just going to go ahead and apologize to everyone sitting down in traffic. Holy hell, was it brutal. I don't know what it's been like the last month or so. Traffic here, it's like it's at an all-time bad. I don't know what, if it's just summer or more people are out traveling places, but it's an absolute nightmare. But we made it in today. Skin of our teeth. Me, Mike Lynch, and of course, I guess it's not, of course, but Andrew Namek joins us again.
Hey, man. How's it going?
To obsess about 17-year-old boys.
That is my wheelhouse.
The best part is, like, so normally it takes me about 20 minutes to get in, right? And you're like a super prepper. So I was like, all right, Namek's doing the show with me today. Because Lynch, we had a whole thing going on. So Rob's out today. We don't know what he's doing. It's the summer of Rob. So Lynch was going to come over and host, and we were going to get Joe Fisher to sit in and produce. But then we found out Fish couldn't do it.
That was at 10 a.m. this morning.
Yeah. So then, like, so Lynch has to produce. So I was like, all right, but it's not like a huge sports day. So I was like, all right, I'll reach out. So we reach out to Namek. We get Namek. So I was like, all right, this will be the show. So I tried to get in a little bit early today. So I left the house a little bit early. Figured I'd get in here, good solid hour, talk to you, because I know you kind of like to have an idea of what we want to do. So I leave the house.
Have you watched Andrew Namek prep for his own show?
Yeah, it's a whole thing. I mean, it's just...
No, I'm being sarcastic. He kicks his feet up and talks to me for a while.
That's because I've already done all my prep,
oh, okay,
Mike Lynch.
Okay.
He preps
okay.
Like a month in advance. He's one of those people. So I set out today. I left significantly early. And then I ran into whatever the hell is happening out there. Like, and that's the worst part is I didn't see any accidents. You can live with it if you see, like, carnage, right? If you see wrecks, you're like, ah, it's all right. But it wasn't. There was no wrecks. It was just a slog. Took me, like, an hour and 10, hour and 15 minutes to get in when normally it takes me 20 minutes. So I come rolling in here, and we had to record some stuff. And so I was like, oh, all right, let's do this. I sit in here, and what do I find when I come in? You and Swag breaking down future high school games of the week. And you're trying to get us out to Lebanon. Like, you want to go down because there's a linebacker that you want to watch.
Hey, Keith Brown is the number 5 inside linebacker in the country on one site. On another one, he's the number 3 outside linebacker in the country. I want to see him in person. I mean, this is what I live for. I live for the oily hips of 17-year-old boy linebackers.
But literally, that's what, like, I came running in.
There was a lot of me dealing with, like, 13-year-old girls.
Yeah, Lynch calls me. Is like, hey, we've got to record some stuff. I'm like, dude, I'm trying to get there as fast as I can. So we get in. Me and Lynch run in, record, and that's when I come running to the studio. It's you trying to convince Swag to have the game of the week be down there. Sibba and Swag's like, what? And you're like... Number one inside linebacker in the country.
You're welcome, Lebanon.
Yes. So if we do make it down to Lebanon to see, what's his name?
Keith Brown.
Keith Brown. You have this man to thank for his oily, swivelly hips. How does the number one inside linebacker come from that place?
He's good, man. He's a wrestler. So he's real flexible. He's a good football player, man. He's six foot one, 225, 230 pounds. He went to a camp. He went to San Antonio for the All-American Bowl showcase.
Yeah.
And he's a kid from Oregon, so it's kind of like, eh, how will this kid be? And he was arguably the breakout player there nationally. He was one of only 5 kids in the country in the class of 2021 to be invited to Atlanta for a camp. He's big time player. And I haven't gotten to see him yet because I always do the game of the weeks, and he doesn't do 7-on-7. Yeah. So I can't see him in the spring. So I want to see this kid play in person.
Does it weird out your wife? That, like, you are singular, like, upset. Well, there's not. There's, like, you're obsessed with, like, shoes and high school boys.
And,
like, does it weird out your wife that you are just laser focused? Because you have to be for what you do.
Yeah, but when we throw in the last one, so yeah. You don't know my other weird obsession.
Yeah.
I am weirdly obsessed with true crime podcasts and serial killers. Oh. I know lots about serial killers.
I think a lot of people are like,
it's a whole niche. Yeah. I know it's real.
I'm not as deep as I was, but like when I was in high school and college, like I had that Time Life series, like where they put out like the series of books. And then they went to like DVDs on serial killers. I too. And then like, I follow a lot of stuff on Twitter. That stuff fascinates me as well. And I've read some books on it. It's not as much. I figured out that it was a little
dark,
a little creepy. Like, do I really want that? It's like the last thing I want before I go to bed. But I've read books on everything from like the Night Stalker to Bundy to John Wayne Gacy, Son of Sam. Ed Gein is a big one. That's like what like Hannibal Lecter was largely based off of, the guy to Wisconsin. Basically, you could do an entire series of serial killer books just off of Wisconsin alone.
Yes.
Like there's so many of them, they're tipping off into the lake. I don't know. So I don't think that's necessarily odd. I think a lot of people are fascinated by that.
But I'm just saying the creepiness factor of what do you like? I like shoes, watching the athletic ability of young boys, and, oh, serial killers. It's a combo that on paper, you could make sound real bad. To answer your question, though, she is honestly fine with it because... You know what? I'm not out doing anything else.
No.
I'm pretty obsessed with it. So I don't spend a ton of money like going out to the bars or buying a bunch of clothes. I do spend some money on shoes, but that's kind of curtailed as I now take care of an 11-month-old at home.
Yeah.
So I think
that
it's
new release Jordan 4 retro. It takes a backseat to formula and, you know, some sort of baby clothes.
Exactly.
I don't understand the whole bit. Like, babies shouldn't cost that much money. I feel like we inflate the cost of babies because I've had 3 of them and I've never, like, obviously you don't do it on your own, right? There's always, well, that's not the case. At least for a father, for the most part, you don't do it on your own. Sometimes moms do it on your own. And they can be spendy, but I feel like, especially with, like, the clothes, that was always my thing is, why does the baby need all the clothes? We bought baby shoes. Kid doesn't walk yet. Why does he need shoes? It's all, there's just, I feel like there's a lot of built-in costs, obviously, with kids. But I feel like we... just as a society here, go way overboard on what babies should cost.
Now,
like,
she works at Carter's, which is a baby clothing store, and she gets it crazy discounted.
Yeah.
So that's not the issue. The issue for us is the diapers, the formula, and then I'm a shoe guy, so I want her to have shoes.
You buy baby
Jordans? She has Jordan 1s in black and pink. She has Nike Air Huaraches.
How old?
She's 11 months old.
She doesn't walk.
She does now.
Okay. So she's just starting to walk. There. Why does she have designer shoes?
The reason is they don't fit her. The Jordan 1s don't fit her yet.
Yeah.
I want her to have the Jordan 1s when her name's Jordan.
Yeah.
I want her to have the Jordan 1s when she turns 1.
Obsessive.
The Jordan 2s when she turns 2. The Jordan 3s when her name was Jordan because we liked the name. It, as much as I like shoes, we didn't name her after Jordan brand shoes. But since her name is Jordan, I want her to have all the way up to 23s the shoes.
Look good, feel good, play good, right?
I guess.
Got a little Jerry Rice
thing. she's gonna have some serious shoe game playing basketball if she's a basketball player.
This is my exact point. Whatever it is, so you were like with baby shoes, like kids are expensive, but we make kids way more expensive than they have to be.
That's fair.
Like the first 3 birthday parties, the first 4 to 5 birthday parties. And I'm sure there'll be a big one. I'm looking at you. You're going to plan a big 1-year birthday,
now,
right?
See, you've got to put – this is a point of contention in our home.
Yeah.
Chantel wants to have a huge party. And she's like, should we have it at the Children's Museum? Yeah. Should we have it at the zoo? Yeah. And I was like, can't we just have a barbecue at our house and, like, people hang out? And she's like, no, we cannot do that. It's not even about her. Yeah. It's about all the other kids and all the other families that are coming over.
It's not. You know who it's about. It's about your wife.
No, yeah, and that's why
it's 100% about her. She will not want to hear this, but it is 100% about her. If you are having a blowout birthday party for your 1-year-old, right, and you're gonna like have it at a children's museum, and you are going to spend serious coin, that is not about the kid. That is not about you, the father. It is not about anyone else. It is about showing everyone else that your child is better than their child.
No, it's not.
And that she is a better mom than all the other moms. That is 100% about the mom and wanting to give like a middle finger to all the other moms and like, look what I got. So that's what it is.
So in her-
that baby doesn't, it's one. Like the baby has no idea. You wouldn't have to have a birthday party. And then when the kid got older, you'd be like, oh, you should have seen your first birthday party. Yeah, it was amazing. Oh yeah, I don't remember. But of course you don't. You were one.
So in her defense, she has a lot of nieces and nephews who range from, they're right in that range of like 7 to 11, where she wants it to be something fun for them. So she's picking something that they will all enjoy, which is why it's Children's Museum.
No, see, but here's the, here's the thing. Your wife is trying to throw you off the scent. She's throwing you a red herring. She's like, no, 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 no. It's about all our nieces and nephews. It's not. It's about her. She just can't admit that it's about her. Because if she admits it's about her, then you have ammunition to come back and be like, this is silly. Like, we shouldn't be spending this money. I could be buying her more Jordan shoes.
Something worthwhile, yeah, like Jordan
something
shoes.
Something worthwhile that she can hold on to. By the way, I will admit, as creepy as the shoe like obsession is, that is kind of cool. Like, if you save them, I'm assuming this goes in some sort of performance art piece. Like, you save each shoe.
Right.
Right? And you make some sort
She has them.
Yeah, right. And you make some sort of...
put them on the bedroom wall or something.
Yeah, display of some kind.
Are you going to be heartbroken if at age 11 she goes, Dad, I don't want to wear these anymore?
No, I'll still buy them and we'll still have them. And that's part of it, too, is like, when does she kind of go on her own and have her own style? And so you see them really well-worn and then suddenly not worn, and then maybe she gets back into it, and then it's like she's into Jordan. And that tells its own story, I think.
What if she grows up and likes Reebok?
Well, I mean, that's not allowed. So,
disowned.
Because you are a Nike guy through Jordan and Nike guy through and through. What if your daughter grows up? What if your daughter Jordan grows up and like gets really into CrossFit and starts wearing like some JJ Watt joints? Starts wearing some old school Allen Iverson.
I just feel like you're trying to upset me early. You're throwing...
When's your daughter turn one?
August 15th is her birthday.
Oh, so it's coming up. I know when I'm getting her for her birthday.
What are you getting her? Some Adidas kicks?
No, it needs to be something offensive.
Oh,
like,
no.
I don't know if Adidas would offend you. Like, what would be the most offensive
footwear?
I know
footwear? I like Adidas.
Maybe some Pro Wings?
No.
Maybe some Velcros?
You gotta let me think on this.
Maybe some like Batman light-up shoes. Does like that hurt you like to your core where you see little kids like wearing like the light-up superhero shoes?
No, I have some like rare Woody Vans. They look like Woody from Toy Story's shoes. And then on the bottom, because they wrote Andy on the
Andy
shoe.
On the bottom.
They say Andy on the bottom. So I have a pair of shoes that say Andy on the bottom, that's how they were actually made. Name being Andrew, but my family calls me Andy. I only bring those out for special occasions. I wore them for my first show, the show that I scripted all the way through. I wore those for good luck. They were several hundred dollars. They're just Vans that say Andy on the bottom.
They're just Vans that say, and there's no, you wouldn't know anything about it. Just, if you just looked at them, they just were normal looking Vans, which, and I have some Vans, they're like what, 50, 60 bucks? But they said Andy on the bottom.
Well, and they're brown. No. And they have a cactus because Woody, Woody. Yeah. And on the inside, it's his yellow plaid shirt. That's the print on it. Most people don't know, but every once in a while, a shoe guy will be like, dude, you got those Woody Vans? That's awesome.
And it makes you.
And then I'm like, and my name's Andrew. And he's, no way. That's happened to me a few times.
And it warms your heart.
And it's just like, this was not worth $400, was it? Because it's some weird guy. Never somebody that I like want to then become friends with ever.
No. So this is why you can't say anything about the birthday party. This is why you have really no like collateral.
There's no bullets in the chamber here.
No, not when you're buying $400 Andy Vans from Toy Story. All right. When we come back, what do we got coming up on today's show? We'll talk a little Dan Le Batard, some ESPN. Some controversial comments. Did the Lakers get played by Kawhi Leonard? I sure hope so. We can talk a little British Open. Savages out there on the baseball diamond. Mike, you want to tune in for that one. But let's start with a little NFL. And the NFL actually, I don't know, did they get it right? Or is the NFL actually backing off and this is a bad thing? That when we come back. Primetime here on The Fan.
Edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 8th through 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Going to get into some NFL here. But real quick, Speaking of Nemec's daughter's shoes, someone said, don't even pretend this is about the kid at all. Keep them all in mint condition in the original box. Don't even let her touch them. It's going to lower the value.
There are those shoe people for sure. It really is about having the shoes she wore growing up and having her have cool shoes. I mean,
so we're talking about this, that Nemec's daughter, who's getting ready to turn one, he's going to buy, her name's Jordan, and your plan is to buy her a pair of Jordan. So Jordan's one through what, 23? All the way up.
Yeah. I mean, by then she can want to continue it on her own. Maybe 21.
How many of these do you actually have already purchased?
Just the ones.
Okay.
So we haven't gone too far.
Can you find all the styles in like little baby versions?
So much easier to find them in baby and young kids, like boys and girls.
Yeah.
They have, like, you go to even the like outlet stores and they'll have like from size 3 to 6. Yeah. They'll have the 4s, the 5s, the 2s, and then you go to men's and it's like the 11s in lime green and brown. Mm. At the outlet stores or whatever. You have to really go to the employee store. I had a hookup for a while and I haven't been able to go in a while. So I gotta reconnect and get in on the ES so I can get some kicks.
What if I got her some Big Baller Brand? How'd that be?
It'd really insult me.
What if I bought her some Big Baller Brand? Because I think you can get those on a little bit of a bargain right now.
If they ever arrive, they will get thrown in the trash. I'm not a big ball family guy.
I feel like I should get her some Big Baller Brand sneaks.
That'd be funny.
I can get her like the hat. I think you can get it all now for $100. I saw that someone tweeted out, this is one of my favorite like fall from graces. I don't actively root against people, right? It's like, hey man, whatever you're doing out there, whatever pilots you along into this world, right? Life can be a kick in the teeth, right? It's, we all know it can be difficult. So whatever gets you from point A to point B, right? If you need aftermarket parts, get aftermarket parts. If you want to buy as many shoes as you want and that's what makes you happy. My brother spends a weird amount of money on autographs. Like, that's his gig. Like, he's out in Cooperstown right now for Edgar Martinez, and he's probably going to cry, which fascinates me, but he has 11 Edgar Martinez autographs. I don't know why he has 11 Edgar Martinez autographs, and he's paid for 11 Edgar Martinez autographs. Like, that, it fascinates me. Like, he pays money to old men who treat him like crap. He was in line once, and like Tom Seaver was yelling at him. And I'm like, dude, you paid Tom Seaver like $100 to sign something, and Tom Seaver is treating you like crap. But he's happy, he smiles, he does it, right? So whatever floats your boat. But occasionally there's something that comes along where I can't help it. Like, the evil side of me gets the better of me, and I want to see someone fail. And I'm not going to lie, the Big Baller Brand thing, I wanted to see that fail. And the fact that it has is, it makes me grin ear to ear. So Darren Revelle posted it. It was like at a local volleyball tournament in California somewhere, like Chino Hills where they're from. They were selling the Big Baller Brand stuff, and it was like $5 t-shirts. Like, the shoes were like $20. Like, these were the same shoes they were trying to sell for $400, right? When they released those, said they were a premium brand. $100 got you one of everything they had. For $100, you get a pair of shoes, flip-flops, hat, shirt, sweatshirt, shorts. $100.
And I even hear the people who are like, LeVar is bucking the NCAA, and I get some of that.
Yeah.
He's also like pretty clearly not a good person.
No.
LaMelo was on the AAU circuit, and I know this through the recruiting stuff. Yeah. He was in a big tournament, and he played for this team that, you know, all those scouts are there, the Rivals, the 24/7 people, and they film highlights for their articles, for rankings and things. They tried to charge something like $200 to anybody who tried to film and get any video of LaMelo, and they had to sign contracts and stuff. So nobody, of course, did it. Yeah. So then that whole team, instead of, I'm on LaMelo's team, so I might, you know, get some cred and some views. You know, sure, somebody might see me because of it. Instead, it just shut down that team basically because they were trying to charge a couple $100. I forget exactly how much it was, a few $100 to film their games. That's past the point of like, I'm just trying to buck the NCAA. Yeah. That's where it starts to get into like, you're ruining your kid's life because he cannot play college basketball at all. And he's going to have to go overseas. And based on how, you know, I can't speak, I guess, to how he was raised, but based on the way the dad presents himself, there are certain assumptions, and based on the son stealing when he was overseas at UCLA, there are certain assumptions that can be made to say maybe the best thing for a young ball kid would not be to go overseas without a whole lot of supervision.
Well, I think that everyone could agree that some form of structure would probably be a positive influence. But the last thing that family wants is any kind of structure. It'll be interesting to see how the other, you know, because one still in the NBA, and you know he'll get his new start there in New Orleans. One is never going to get a shot at the NBA. But supposedly the younger kid, like I've seen some like NFL or not NFL, but NBA draft boards where people still have him as a lottery pick. You know what? I think it's either 2 years from now, because I think he's a senior in high school. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But there's just something about like that. That may be my most, I can't say I hate him because I don't know him, but I have zero respect for that whole situation and that family. And the thing that bothers me the most about it isn't necessarily, it's not anything that necessarily the kids, I just feel like the dad, like that none of that to me was about the kids. That was about the dad. And that as a parent, that bothers me greatly. And I feel like he was just trying to make a buck off his kid's back and tried to promote himself. And that, I don't know, there's just something about that bothers me. Like if you're doing all that and your goal is to promote your sons and your goal is to get your sons to a better spot, I can live with some of that. Even I can live with that kind of parent, even if I don't necessarily agree with it. But when I feel like you're just trying to make a cheap buck at the expense of your kids, I can't root for it. I can't get behind it.
Right. And I think there is a place to say, you know what, my young athlete, like the next LeBron, maybe,
sure,
if his parents are business savvy or connect with the right people, we're going to create our own brand.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be good enough. We're not just going to sign with Nike or Adidas. We're going to do our own thing. There is a place for that. But it was so like fly by night, random. He didn't have a plan in place. He just did whatever. And then, you know, went on First Take or whatever and said he was better than Michael Jordan and all that stuff. It was just so self-serving and self-aggrandizing that it really devalued what you even thought of the kid, who, by the way, his son's a pretty good basketball player. Lonzo's a really good on-ball defender. Lonzo could end up being one of those guys who makes two or three All-Star games. If that's the case, are you ever going to remember him as a really good basketball player who made a few All-Star games? No. Are you going to remember him with the guy with the crazy dad who the Lakers now say it was an absolute nightmare trying to get him to shut up?
Exactly. I do want to get to the NFL stuff, but you brought up something there and I'm intrigued by it. So I want to go down this road and we'll circle back, because I do want to get to the Tyreek Hill thing, because I do think it's interesting what the NFL is doing. Because for a long time, the NFL, I thought, was overstepping their bounds. When there wasn't a whole lot of proof, the NFL was just handed down suspensions left and right. See Ezekiel Elliott, see Tom Brady. And now it feels like it's gone the other way. Maybe to the point where people are going to be like, hey, what the hell are you doing? It's self-corrected too far. So I don't want to talk about that. But you brought up something with the whole, you know, building your own brand thing. And I saw a preview today for Showtime's doing another All or Nothing with the Carolina Panthers. And they're releasing clips. So it'll be last year's Carolina Panthers. They filmed all this. But it was talking about Cam Newton, and he was in there talking about his brand. And he said that when he was coming out of Auburn, he doesn't want to just be another quarterback. He wants to build a brand. And obviously what LeBron has done, and everyone's trying to follow the model of Michael Jordan, right? Who has been removed from the game for 20 years now and still has the biggest brand in basketball. So when you're dealing with kids, and sit on this, and we'll talk about it when we come back, so we got a break. But I want to ask, when you're going around and you're dealing with kids that are getting recruited now, because you basically, if you're on the West Coast, you know about them. Basketball, football, you're tied into it. How many of these kids at the age of 16, 17 years old, whether they're a 3-star or whether they're a 5-star, how many of those kids are already thinking about that? Not about where they want to go to school, not about getting an education, not about even what provides the best opportunity for me to play or play right away. How much of that is building a brand? Because I feel like, just from an outsider's perspective, every athlete that I look at, whether they're in college, whether in the pros, or seemingly when they're in high school, more and more this has become about that. How can I better build my brand? I'll touch upon that when we come back. Here, though, Lynch with Sports Center.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 8th through 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in. Just after 3:30 on a beautiful Friday. Sorry about traffic, but we got you here till 7 o'clock.
We will get to the Tyreek Hill stuff, and I want to talk about the NFL. And did the NFL go too far one way, and now are they self-correcting, and it's going too far back the other? But we stumbled upon this. Somehow we started talking about basically building brands. Started talking about shoes. That led us to Big Baller Brand, which, don't worry, I will get your daughter a pair for her birthday. It's going to be very exciting. The Lonzo ones, they'll be coming her way. It's going to be pretty good. Little Big Baller sweatshirt. If you could send me a photo of that, it's going to be adorable. But I hear this all the time, that I have to build my brand. You hear it from pro athletes. You hear it from certainly college athletes. If you don't think that Zion Williamson was building his brand when he was at Duke, you're fooling yourself. And these guys walk into leagues now with shoe contracts and apparel contracts and everything else. No one's probably done it better since Michael than LeBron. I bet you LeBron has made more money off the court than he has on. And now you've seen this trickle down into high school kids, and that goes to the Big Baller thing. So I think you're in a unique position because you're close to a lot of these kids and you're close to the AAU programs and everything. So I'll ask you the question, you know, locally here, even this just West Coast and the kids that you deal with, how many of these kids at the age of 16, 17 years old, this goes into their thinking of how can I better build my brand?
I think a lot of athletes that are high level athletes think about it, but I don't think they think about it in the way that you or I think about brand, like Nike, Adidas. Mm-hmm. But they do think about, how do I market myself as an individual? They do it as a recruiting piece, like I'm the hardworking kid or I'm the humble, you know, good student. There's some of that. Where I've seen it, where it's, you know, capital B brand, mm-hmm. the Nike Hoop Summit's here every year. Team USA versus the world team.
Sure.
And you will have kids who are uncommitted there, and it's loud. The first time I ever covered an event, I left like, oh my gosh, basketball's so corrupt. Guys would do interviews and they'd say, well, here's my top five, but I'm a Nike guy, which meant, I think now that I've seen all the evidence stack up with the case with the FBI, that Nike was either going to give them money or promised, if you make it, we will give you money. So they would have top fives. Four of them would be Nike schools. One would be Adidas. And it'd be like, but I'm actually a Nike guy.
Yes. And it's not even on the table simply because you have a different shoe contract than what I would prefer.
Right. And not only that, but the Nike rep has promised my family, or the Adidas rep has promised my family, they'll take care of me if I make it. And sometimes even whether or not, because for them, $150,000 to these kids through the family, give it to the AAU coach, donate it to the AAU coach program, have it funneled to the family.
Yeah.
That's a drop in the bucket if 4 years later he's the next Zion, or he's the next, a year later, forget 4 years later, a year later, he's the next Zion, and they're like, hey, we took care of you before. Instead of $150 million, how about $130 million? So they can afford to drop that kind of money to build with the family, where the 17-year-old kid, the 16-year-old kid says, I'm Adidas, I'm Nike, because down the road, if they make it, they can shave off money on the back end, and they build that relationship to get the next Zion, the next LeBron. And the brands are very much aware. If you look at football right now, 7-on-7 football is really big. Adidas made a major push a couple years ago. They figured out who the best team in every state was. And I know this because the best team in Oregon, this happened, the best team in Oregon, and this was their pitch. They wanted to sponsor, and they would give you cleats, gloves, gear, shirts for every team that was the best 7-on-7 team in each state. So the best 7-on-7 team in Florida, the best 7-on-7 team in Texas, the best in Oregon, because they wanted kids in their highlights, all in Adidas gear, saying three-stripe life. And that's what you see with like Tate Martell and Tyjon Lindsey, where they were at Bishop Gorman, won a national championship. Tate is all about three-stripe life. He talks about it, he tweets about it. And that was because, and I'm sure he liked Adidas anyway, but Adidas, right at the time he was a freshman or sophomore, made a major push to get involved with these kids to say, hey, 7-on-7, we're going to own it, because all the top kids, high school kids in football, play 7-on, and we want football to become the three-stripe life.
And so as you build your own personal brand, Adidas becomes part of that brand. It becomes part of you. You're known as an Adidas guy when you're 16, 17 years old. And think about, like, kind of just when you're that age, how impressionable you are, and how, I don't know, how deep that first impression can go. And I'm sure that sticks with a kid. It's just, it fascinates me to see the individual marketing of it. You even see it now. Like, what has happened to recruiting to me just, it fascinates me, because I went through it in the late 90s, and there's nothing
that I recognize about recruiting. There's nothing I recognize about college football anymore. Like when I look at my experience, nothing makes me feel older than when, like, we had Jake Hansen and Jacob Breland in today or yesterday we had them in. They were doing this little caravan thing that Oregon does, like with an internship, and they were taking around all these different kind of businesses. And I was just kind of listening to their experiences and what it's like. There is nothing I can relate to from my last year of college, 2000, 2001. There's nothing I can relate to in 2018, 2019, moving into 2020. Absolutely nothing I can relate to my experience and their experience. It's just in 20 years, and it just makes me wonder where it's heading in another 20 years.
Oh, it's wild. I mean, I went to the opening a few years ago. It's a couple years ago, and it was the definitive moment of, okay, recruiting, I like the not the business of it, but the actuality of it, but I hate the show of it. Mm-hmm. I was at the opening, and a crimson Lamborghini rolled up with a huge Florida State mascot logo on the hood, and a kid jumped out of the passenger seat, grabbed a Florida State flag, and ran on the field, and he had shades on, a headband on. He was announcing his commitment.
Where did he get a Florida State Lamborghini?
I don't know, but he was at Nike headquarters, and he drove it onto the sidewalk, drove it up, and you just go, is this really where we were? And Elijah Molden was there.
Yeah.
Elijah Molden is the son of Alex Molden, who was a famous duck for that gangrene team in the mid-90s. He was a first-round NFL draft pick.
Sure.
And I talked to Elijah, and he's as like technique-driven, and I would never do that as it gets. And I was like, would you ever do that? And he's like, man, I think my dad would kill me. And he grew up more in your era. It is insane because the kids thought that was cool. Also at the opening, another time where I'm like, I don't understand football anymore. Jerry Rice was one of the volunteer coaches the last year of the opening. So he's
kind of a big deal, right?
He's running routes with the kids and running route. And just for me, he's my favorite player ever.
Sure.
So I'm just geeking. I'm wearing a 49er
hat. And he probably still looks like he can do it.
He was running routes and they were like perfect.
Yeah. Rice is still like in shape. He's one of those guys. He will never let himself, you know, go by the wayside.
So the kids are asking him questions and he's talking and a couple of kids aren't really listening. And then OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr. comes up.
Yeah.
And everyone stops what they're doing and mobs his golf cart. Yeah. And they blast the music and they all start dancing. And I'm like, why did you not do that for Jerry Rice? And Jerry's just standing there watching. It's like, you know, I get OBJ's good. I'm not saying he's not good. But Jerry Rice is the GOAT of GOATs.
Yes.
I mean, he's the greatest of all time, maybe of any sport. Yeah, than Gretzky.
Well, he might just be the best football player of all time.
Right.
Just any position.
And there's OBJ, who's definitely one of the top three or four receivers in the league, but not for sure number one.
But do you know what he has that Rice doesn't? He has a
swagger.
He's got a brand.
Blonde hair.
And this is kind of, but all of those things. Like, yeah. I think Deion Sanders might have been the first guy, and I've read interviews with Deion where he's admitted that some of that stuff at Florida State in the primetime was a bit of an act, that a lot of that stuff was to get him attention. But you think about a guy, so Odell Beckham, this is a really good example. He's a really good receiver. But is Odell Beckham the best receiver in the NFL? Or, you know, is he, I don't know, one of the greatest of all time? No, but he's the most well-known. And I think when you look at least that position is a marquee position, but I think DBs do this a bunch, like Darrell Revis and Josh Norman. I think a lot of these guys talk to get attention. I think Richard Sherman did this. Richard Sherman got Chunky Soup commercials and Jack's League beef jerky, and he became a household name. Did he become a household name because he was a really good corner? Or did he become a household name because he was a really good corner that was outspoken and brought a lot of attention to himself? And I think kids see that. And I think kids see it at a younger and a younger age. And I just think there's more and more kids that have an agenda that the name on the back is more important than the one on the front. And I'm not going to be the old fuddy-duddy and say that that's the worst thing in the world, because those colleges are using the kids, and I have no problem with the kid using it. I just think sometimes that line really becomes blurred to where you have to have some sort of balance. I get building a brand or having it be an individual thing, because the sport of the school will chew you up and spit you out, so get out of it what you can. But some of it has just become, I don't know, just so far one way that to me, in order to have any sort of success, there has to be some form of balance. And I just think at times that balance is lost in the me thing. Like, and all these things, when I read about recruits, very rarely do I hear about whether or not the kid's a winner. Do I read about, you know, does the kid win a state title? Does he make his teammates better? Very rarely do you hear anything about that. It's simply about, you know, is the kid big? Is he fast? Does he run a 4.4? And, you know, how many Twitter likes does he have? And how good does he look doing his photo shoot, you know, behind the background, and how well does he look, as opposed to, is the kid an actual player? Does he enjoy playing the game? Is he a good teammate? Would you want him on? That's the thing, is I think not all 4 or 5-star recruits are created equally. I think there's a difference between, I got to stop short of saying, because I know talent wins. But to me, I would almost rather have the less talented kid that loves the game, knows how to play it right, and is going to do things, I don't know, seemingly, quote, the right way, as opposed to someone that's uber talented that seems to have his own agenda.
Yeah, and I think there's some truth to that, but give me the really talented kid that does things the right way.
Sure.
Those kids still exist. Like Jay Butterfield,
yeah.
His dad played in the NFL. He's an Oregon commit. He's the number 2 pro-style quarterback in the country. He's probably going to fall in the rankings. And part of the reason is, like, I don't want to just go out and do the, like, loud music 7-on-7 thing. I'll just work on my craft with my dad, with my trainer, and get better that way. And they want him to go to all these camps and be a part of it. And he literally doesn't want to do it. And he doesn't want to do it because he doesn't really think it helps that much. And yeah, you can build connections and maybe build a brand. He's not into that. Watch his stock drop. That happens. I mean, it really does, where kids say, Justin Herbert, the reason Justin Herbert was an unknown, unranked for a while, and then he became like a 2-star or 3-star, was because he didn't like going to those camps. He didn't like doing it. He broke his leg as a junior. I'd seen him. And Jordan Johnson, who does, you know, the podcast with me once a week, we were like, this might be one of the best 4 or 5 quarterbacks in the country. And nobody knew about him because he's like, I don't like going to all that stuff and doing all that. So there is a self-promotion aspect to recruiting, yeah, that I think bothers me, certainly. And I hear it bothering you too. I imagine it bothers a lot of the listeners, because it is kind of icky that at 17, you're already building a brand. You might very well end up being, and there's nothing wrong with it, a school teacher, anything, a lawyer, yeah, whatever. And you don't need to build a brand. Don't worry about it. Just focus on technique and doing things the right way. A North Carolina basketball assistant coach said, we got all these big time recruits and these one and done kids. And we'd start and kind of, okay, we're going to run some motion offense and kind of see how you guys move. And he said, we had to go back to teaching the big guys, particularly, how to set a screen, because they played AAU, they'd done the circuit, they'd done dunk contests. Some of them didn't know how to set a screen. That's how far this thing has gone at, yeah, times. And it's frustrating.
And that's where I wonder, like, where it's heading. Like, if we've seen this metamorphosis over the last, let's say, 10 to 15 years. And again, I'm not trying to do the bitter old man yelling at a crowd where it's going, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen. But it does make me wonder a little bit, what does this thing look like in 10, 15 years? Maybe we'll poke around at that when we come back. Primetime here on The Fan.
I think it's really sexy.
This is a British Open Week edition of Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
Presented by the Winco Foods Portland Open, August 8th through 11th.
On 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. Some NFL talk coming up at the top of the hour. We'll get into the Tyreek Hill situation. You can send us your thoughts. We're talking a little recruiting here. Just kind of the future of it, the, quote, building your brand, what's kind of happened. I'd say over the last 15 years and it's not just high school kids, all the way from college to the NFL, has the name on the back become more important than the name on the front? 55305. Someone was, a couple people have texted this in. Chris Peterson gets a lot of flack from his own at Washington for not going after higher ranked players because he values the character and the perspective of getting the right guys. And I have heard that, you know, from people up there at UW, that he doesn't necessarily go as hard for some of the higher ranked players that he is trying to find and this comes probably from the Boise State days, that he's trying to necessarily find the right guy and not necessarily the most talented of player.
Yeah, he also does the make sure there are kind of guys thing. And yeah, you're right. But it's been a problem because they have a historic nucleus right now. It's a storyline all its own. We could do an hour on this. We really could. The 2020 class in Washington, their top 4 or 5 are as good as anyone else in the country. Mm-hmm. Savell Small is the number four player in the country, a defensive end, outside linebacker. G. Scott Jr., whose dad is a radio host for ESPN up there, he's committed to Ohio State. He's one of the top players in the country. Washington waited to offer some of those kids, and they got mad.
Yeah.
Savell Smalls has Oregon on his list. He's eliminated Washington. G. Scott Jr., just within the last couple weeks, he's already one of the top receivers in the country, just picked up an offer from Washington. They've rubbed some kids the wrong way. And just like Oregon a few years ago, we started to go, are we sure Helfrich can recruit? Because all those really talented kids from Oregon, that 2018 class, yeah, they all left. Talanoa to USC, Marlon Tuipulotu to USC, Elijah Molden to Washington, slow-playing kids. They're having that same problem now, and their fan base is pissed.
Well, it's interesting because you can have this philosophy of, I want to find my guy, and we will find it the right guy. But if every high school kid wants it done a certain way, how many kids are you alienating by doing it differently than everyone else? And can you afford to? It'll be an interesting case study to see as it goes along if we see a drop off in Washington, because we haven't seen so far, even though Washington doesn't necessarily have, you know, every year like a top 10 class. You look at the guys they're putting into the NFL, you look at their developmental system. I mean, every year they're changing over their defense, and it doesn't seem to matter. The next kid up is still ended up being a stud. And so we'll see if that ends up being sustainable, or if that approach of finding, quote, the right guy ends up hurting them a little bit.
Well, and teams have adjusted to that. You know, I know you remember, everybody remembers the idea of getting your offer pulled.
Sure.
And how awful that was, and that was considered. Now, they just call it a non-committable offer. They have committable offers and non-committable offers.
Yeah.
And a non-committable offer comes early. They all come early now. They come when they're freshmen, sophomore.
Yeah,
even
Oregon's offered like, what, 200 and something kids?
Oh, 300 something. Yeah, yeah.
And they have 300 offers out there, and there's what, 23, 24, 25 spots?
I equate it to the note. Do you like me? Yes, no, maybe.
Yeah.
That's all it is like, hey, we're interested in you. That's what an offer is now. And Washington doesn't totally buy into that. That's why kids are upset with Washington a little bit is, listen, we've already built in the whole don't slow play kids. Just offer them non-committable offers, but show you're interested. The problem is when you wait, and this is what happened to Jonathan Smith in year one at Oregon State. He did the the Chris Peterson model.
Sure.
And there was
where did he come from? Boise State and Chris Peterson.
There were times when Oregon State offered kids that already had offers from like Alabama, LSU, USC, Oregon, Washington, Ohio State, Michigan. And then Oregon State would go, hey, you check all our boxes. And the kid goes, who cares? Who cares? And if you do that with your in-state kids, and that's what Chris Peterson's running into a little bit with these highly rated, and I'm talking like high 4 and 5 sure, star kids in Washington, is we already have offers from Alabama, LSU. Alabama's defensive coordinator showed up at my high school. You just now are DMing me that I have an offer? Like, who cares? That's a problem.
I wonder, when you're a kid and you show up on campus, like that's why I said, like, it's weird for me because I don't recognize what that athlete must have going through his head. I remember showing up at you know, whether it was to a camp at Oregon, a camp at Washington State, going to a recruiting visit, you know, going to BYU. I remember showing up there just being like, God, I hope I, you know, don't screw up. Don't get my ass kicked. Right. Just let's figure this thing out. It's like, I knew I was probably going to redshirt. It's like, hey, I didn't go in with the idea of, oh, I am the man. And I feel like now the way things are, every kid shows up on campus, I'm going to start. I'm going to be an impact player, and I'm gone in 2 or 3 years. It's just, it's like a mentality shift that's where we're at now. And I wonder how many of those kids actually get humbled, or how many of them are delusional and still believe that. And does that come into the whole rash of transferring? If you come in and you're not a star right away, like I came in and, you know, I was like, I got my ass kicked that first year. And it was like, all right, I got to figure this out. And if I want to get on the field, and now it kind of feels like you get your ass kicked and it's like, hey, I want to go somewhere else.
We used to see that these 5-star guys occasionally, as they do, they get a big head and they stop working, right? We used to see that with kids, and you'd say, man, how did that 5-star bust out when he got to wherever? We are now starting to see that because it's so big,
yeah,
and 15 and 16-year-olds are getting ranked. We're seeing that in football. By the time the kid's a senior in high school,
yeah,
he's just kind of flamed out because he got attention for 2 years. He stopped lifting. He stopped grinding. He stopped working. And that's why we are seeing that rash of transfers. You asked, where will this be going down the road?
Yeah, 15 years. What does this look like?
I think it's going to get really hard. It's going to get really hard to rank properly. I've seen kids that I've ranked really high when they were sophomores, and I watched him as a junior, and like, he's slower, he's fatter, he's less crisp, he clearly doesn't seem to care very much right off. And I rate him the one of the top kids in the state of Oregon the year before. That happens, and we're going to start seeing that happen, I think, more. These top hundreds are like, it's just a snapshot. If these kids continue to work at the level they're at right now, this is what they could be. But we're seeing with all the Twitter follows, with coaches literally flying in on college coaches on a helicopter, landing next to their high school field to watch their games. That happens. That actually happens. We're seeing these kids get such big heads that they get ranked. That happens to them. They get a ton of offers. Nick Saban shows up at their house, and suddenly they stop working. We're going to see more busts and more transfers, because the reality of football is, and you know this as well as anybody, it hurts playing football.
Yep.
It hurts playing football. And when you're getting the glory and scoring touchdowns, it hurts a little less than when you're third string and getting beat up and you don't necessarily, or you've never been used to putting in that work, not to score touchdowns and look like the hero, but to even get reps and playing time. And we're seeing more and more kids transfer because of it.
The story that I always throw out there is my first year at BYU, my freshman camp. You know, the first couple days, now it's different because, you know, you do non-padded practices. Back in the day, it was like, hey, first day, here's some helmets and shoulder pads, go. But the first couple days were not with the vets. The first couple days were just with the freshmen, right? We got a couple extra days because, hey, why the hell not? And I remember playing really well against the other freshmen and being like, hey, I might be able to do this. And then the older kids showed up, and I was playing against backups. I was playing against the twos, and I was like, hey, I can do this, right? I can play. So it was maybe the third day with everyone together, and I was having myself a really good camp and just thought I was king of the world. I was like, dude, I can play. And it was like, you know, we do scrimmages, you know, different, you know, do like inside run drill. You do like blitz pickup. So we were doing like I don't remember if it was blitz pickup or inside run, but basically a team kind of controlled scrimmage. And I remember it was like 3-4 plays into it, and the center gets his foot stepped on, is kind of limping a little bit, and they're like, hey, go in. I remember running into that huddle thinking, I'm going to light the world on fire, right? Here it comes. Watch this. And we had a middle linebacker by the name of Rob Morris who ended up going, I think, 18th, 19th overall first round to the Indianapolis Colts. Rob was really good, a lot better than I was. And I was going to show everybody how great I was and was all geared up. Snapped the ball on the wrong count. So on two,
good start.
Snapped it on one. Quarterback wasn't ready. So hit the quarterback's hand, like jammed his finger. Ball gets fumbled. Rob comes in, hits me, knocks me ass over a tea kettle. I fall on top of the quarterback. He recovers the fumble, then laughs at me, steps on me as he's going over the top of me. The quarterback gets up, takes the football, and says, get this freshman bleep out of here, and throws the ball at my leg. And I just look over to the sidelines, and there's my offensive line coach with his old bony finger just giving me the come here. Let's go stand over here. And that day, it was a bit of a humbling experience. And the rest of that camp was too, where I realized, yeah, I'm not as good as I thought I was. And you know, I just think a lot of kids have that. And when you're told that you're a 4 or a 5-star kid, and you're told you're the greatest kid in the world, and again, you're going to build your own brand, and everyone loves you on Twitter, and everyone, you know, it's just all this hype train. I think it's hard when kids get to college and you have your first taste of failure, maybe for the first time. That was my first experience failing in football. Up until that point, I had always been the best player on the team. I'd always been able to compete even against the older kids. And that was the first time I can remember being like, this is really hard. I am not the best. I am just another guy. And you either figure it out and you find a way to grind and get on the field, or I've seen a lot of kids that go the other way, and I just don't know if the culture we're producing right now. I will say this. The culture is producing better freshmen than ever before. They're better prepared. They're better shaped. They're ready to go. But on the other end, I think it's producing an entire class of weak kids that don't have the fortitude to actually fight through that adversity. All right, we come back. The Tyreek Hill thing, is the NFL going too far the other way? Primetime here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.